Hey, welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless. If at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Hold on to your lug nuts, kids. Time for an overall. Let's do it. Delighted to have you back with me one more time. I think I said with me, but if I didn't and I screwed it up, I'm not going to go back and edit it. I'm glad to have you with me, no matter where you're listening in the world, down under to up north and from east to west. It's every Saturday morning I get the biggest kick out of this. Get to come in my studio after a week of other things for other people and do my own stuff. And there was a time it was the reverse, where I spent most of the time on my stuff and did things for other people. But that's just the ebb and flow of life, I guess. That's just the way things go. I was out with some friends yesterday. It all ties in, hopefully, to what we're doing here this morning together. And I get to see them once a year. And we go back a long ways, 30, 35, 40 years, I suppose. And they have family in the area. They're from a different state. And they came in. We met at lunch in Chicago. And it was fantastic and wonderful and great to see them. And there's something about old friends, and you realize we're all getting older, and you know, you go through different experiences and things, and you can relate because you kind of been chewing the same gravel over time. And the conversation came up about radio. They all know that I'm doing it, and they've known me since before I was the guy on the radio, before I was the guy that wrote books, before I was the guy that did TED Talks and all the rest of that stuff. And they were remarking that on one hand, they're totally surprised that this has become my career. And on the other hand, because we always have two hands, that's what it's all about, was they're not that surprised that there was something they saw in me a long time ago when I was a younger guy that would allow for the fact that this is the route that my life would take. And we got into quite a conversation and discussion about calling versus career and how some of them are both, I guess you could say. And so it was a pretty in-depth conversation. And at one point, one of my friends brought up the concept of faith. You know, where does your faith fit into all this, John? That really took a deep dive because this person that asked me the question knew me from when I was a kid going to a Presbyterian church. And I started having conversation with her about how that has changed for me up and down, in and out, back and forth, over and under, over the years. My faith and how it shows up in my life or how it's displayed or how I honor it. And I went back to this guy who was the reverend at the Presbyterian church when I was there. Now, this is in the 1973, 4, 5, somewhere in there, or all of those years. And I was originally recruited, like a lot of the neighborhood boys, to play basketball for the church. And in order to do that, you kind of become a member. So that means my mom and dad had to go to church like twice a year, Easter and Christmas Eve. And they were good with that. Interestingly enough, though, this Presbyterian church was a pretty, you know, short walk from our house on the northwest side of Chicago. But our neighbors, they all went to St. Edward's, which is a Catholic church. And St. Ed's was a huge parish back then. I mean, it may still be now. But the neighborhoods were different in Chicago back then. There was a lot of kids, a lot of young families, and a lot of options. So I just remember one of the guys I went to grammar school with was real tall, and they had a basketball team, and his brother, his older brother, coached that team at the church. And that's how that started. It wasn't like I sat one day and thought, geez, because, you know, I was baptized a Catholic, and I learned the Lord's Prayer and did all the things you're supposed to do. And then I'm playing basketball as a Presbyterian. So it was pretty interesting. But this guy, who was the Reverend Bob G. Sills, was a towering figure in my life at the time, and is to this day, quite frankly. And he was from Alabama or somewhere down there, and he tells a story, and I only remember parts of it, that he was literally picking cotton for a living. And he felt the Lord tap him on the shoulder one day and say, Bob G., it's your time to go spread the word. And he literally got out of the cotton field and went to the training to be a Presbyterian minister. And I'm thinking, why did she just do the Baptist route? But he was called to the Presbyterian thing for whatever reason. So all that conversation kind of came and went, and I was recalling a story to them about meeting Bob G 25, 30 years later after all that took place back in the 70s. And at that time, he was the minister at a much smaller congregation near Rockford or something like that. And I called the church office and asked, is this the same Reverend Bob G. Sills that was at the Presbyterian? Oh, yeah, that's him. I said, well, I'm going to stop by. Do you have services other than Sunday? And there just happened to be one, I think, on a Friday night or something. Again, it's been a while, but it wasn't your normal Sunday morning deal. And I said, I'm a long time ago parishioner. I have not seen him. I'm going to try and stop it. And she goes, oh, that'd be wonderful. I won't say anything. So I got there. And the service was already underway, and I sat in the way back, just like I was when I was a kid, except there was no balcony. I just sat way in the back by myself, and I listened to this guy who now was in his 80s, and he was still bringing the wood. You know, he was still hammering the nails. I was so impressed with him. Oh, and, you know, there maybe have been 70 people there. Back in the day when there was a couple hundred people went to church every Sunday back at the Presbyterian thing. So it was like half of the people were there, if less than that. And it didn't matter to him. He was still doing his thing. Got to have a lot of respect for that. So as the service ended, now back in the day in the 70s when the service ended, he would, you know, the choir would well up and they'd sing some wonderful song and he would walk from the pulpit and grab his wife's hand and they'd stride up the aisle. And boy, we couldn't wait to say thanks at the end of the service to him on the way out the door on a Saturday on a sunny Sunday morning. Just fantastic memory. Well, there's none of that. He was by himself. It's dark in there. He's finishing up his sermon, and an organist plays. There's no big choir anymore. And he starts walking down the aisle and walking out. And as he's walking out, I'm sitting pretty much in the dark by myself, and he walks down the aisle. He takes a look at me. He said, about time you got back to church. It was wonderful. So I got to spend an hour or so with him after the service in his office. And God, I felt like I was in the presence of royalty. I don't think I've ever been so enamored with someone, mostly because of the impact he made on me when I was a young man. He had his pipe out. You know, he was like, it was almost like talking to Santa Claus, for God's sakes, except with a spiritual bend to it. And I think maybe Santa does have a spiritual bend to him. So anyway, it was fantastic. We talked about all that at lunch yesterday. And I say all that to get to this thing that I came across later yesterday afternoon. I got this new computer. I've been kind of complaining about it on and off on different podcasts, and I'm starting to get the hang of it. I still have a difficulty because some of the stuff has not transferred over from my old Cadillac of a Dell, and so I have to open the Cadillac of a Dell to get things off or move things around, and the keyboard is in a different position, so I'm writing all kind of gibberish and shit. So anyway, I'm looking for things, and I came across this document, and it's called the Prayer Memo. What is this? So I wrote this 4 years ago. I never used it for anything. And I found that was just kind of an interesting coincidence that we're having this big, deep conversation about faith at lunch. And I came across this document. So rare is it that I use any kind of script on this program, but I'm going to read this because I read it through yesterday. I'm like, well, first of all, it's not half bad. Second, it's interesting to me because I write so much. I'm getting ready to start another book here in the next few weeks. It'll be book number 9. Every English teacher I had in grammar in high school are spinning in their graves thinking, what? This guy? So when I find something that I've written that I've totally forgotten about, which is a lot of stuff, because it's just volumes of thoughts that I've had, and then I find value in the very thing I wrote, that's fascinating to me. Because this stuff comes not from my conscious mind, but from my subconscious. There's no doubt. Listen, my best grades were lunch and gym in school. I mean, I kind of fudged that a little bit, but I certainly didn't take journalism, writing class, none of that stuff. So wherever this comes from, I'm humbled that it always shows up. I'm just the hollow bones here, the vehicle, I feel, to get stuff out sometimes, much like BG was, even though he was trained to do what he did. But he was there to deliver the mail, and I've always used that in my work, saying, look, all I can do is deliver the mail, kids. I can't read it for you. You may hate this. but maybe you might want to take a look or a listen and see if there's something there for you. I'm always about questioning things. I want to know why. I want to know why. I want to know where specifically, why specifically, how specifically, and when specifically. I don't live in generalities. I live in specifics. When you get down to specifics, things change dramatically. So I come across this, and I wrote this as the prayer memo. I'm going to share it with you for whatever it's worth, and we'll leave it at that. And at the end, I'll just walk right down the aisle like old B.G. Sills. Does prayer work? If so, what happens to the theory that it does, and you pray for an outcome, and it doesn't happen or turn out like you think it should, or hoped for, or prayed that it would? Then what? I've been keeping a little prayer scorecard of sorts for the past 4 months or so, just taking notes about the number of times I've seen a post on Facebook requesting prayers for a number of things, like healing from illness, or an accident, or followed by a loss of someone or a pet, and then prayer requests for a difficult situation or challenge. And some are very generic. Need prayers, it says, with no explanation of where to direct the intent from those willing to participate. What usually follows that request is a flood of emoji praying hands to get used as a symbol for prayer, an instant flare of faith, as it were, that gets launched into the internet stratosphere without any real targeted person, place, or thing. No specifics. First, here's the official, I'm using quote fingers, look, quote fingers, here's the first official definition of a prayer: an invocation or act that seeks to activate a rapport with an object of worship through deliberate communication. In the narrow sense, the term refers to an act of supplication or intercession directed towards a deity, a god, or a deified ancestor. More generally, prayer can also have the purpose of thanksgiving or praise. Just this morning, I counted 42 Facebook posts requesting prayers, not from some anointed religious leader or a "send me your cash and I'll tell God we're pals" televangelist, but from folks like you and me, you know, the common clay of the Facebook landfill. As humans get more and more comfortable with sharing our most intimate conversations with the world, I mean, the person in the car next to me at the stoplight last night was talking on their cell phone through the car speakers so loud, got an earful of stuff I can't unhear, nor should I. And this communal platform becomes an altar of argument, as well as a place to ask for help and healing. I'm in wonder about the energy created around all of this activity. At present, I'm editing out a book project based on quantum physics, which is not my strongest area of learning, as it pertains to happiness. And as I've been reading over and digging into the concept that everything is energy on some level, which has long been a tenet for me, another question comes to mind. Is it possible that prayer is just another form of energy? Does the intent of the person who is praying, even though there is no guarantee that what they're praying for, healing, money, job, relationship, pet, or person, will turn out the way they might be hoping for, does that matter? It's a conundrum to me because I have witnessed some things I cannot explain that seem to be directly intended results of prayer. Prayer works, yay! And at the same time, I've watched while hundreds of people pray for someone to recover from a fill-in-the-blank illness or accident, and that person does not make it. And then what? I do not have an answer, just more questions. Is the Almighty sitting on a throne of sorts, going through the book of life, plucking a name here or there, and then putting some sort of malady in their lives just to see how faithful they are? How do you explain the two posts show up back to back, one giving thanks for the power of prayer, as indicated by over 90 praying hand emojis that restored someone to full health, and then right after it, twice as many people sending prayers of sympathy for the loss of someone's life? Does a group of people on an internet page created by a billionaire that type prayers influence who dies and who lives? If someone we pray for dies, does that mean that prayer doesn't work? If someone who is critically ill is prayed for and recovers, does that mean that they're more anointed than the person who passed away in the next hospital room that had more people praying for them as well? Do you have to be on bent knee in desperation for a prayer to be heard? Or can you just kind of float along, asking the Creator to take care of business as he, she, or it sees fit? Over time, I've posed some of these questions to those I consider way more learned than I, from various religions and beliefs. And the answers from them range from the will of God is the determining factor for everything, to prayer is nothing more than hope actualized, to prayer is an act of worship that glorifies God and reinforces our need for him. Because, you know, it's a man. Depending on Google search results, there are 4 to 8 important prayers. Ready? Number 1, adoration, you know, praising God. 2, contrition, asking for God's forgiveness. 3, petition, asking God for a favor. Hey, help me out over here. I need to win the lottery. Number 4, thanksgiving, showing God, you know, a little gratitude. Then you get some additional heavy-duty prayers like number 5, communion, all day, all the time, on your knees. Number 6, supplication, lifting your needs. Number 7, intercession on behalf of others. And then the biggie, the Super Bowl size of prayer. Number 8, spiritual warfare, asking God to give you the strength to battle against Satan, whatever form it takes, or demons that you may run into. Since we all get to define our demons, I'll just leave number 8 up to your interpretation. I would add that there's another one, number 9, to that list, praying your team wins with a last-second field goal. As thousands of fans pray when the ball is snapped, that it goes through the uprights and secures victory, confirming on that day, in that holy moment, God is on their side. You know, like the Packer fans think. For me personally, I've taken the stance that prayer cannot hurt or make matters worse, and I'm fully aware that my intercession is merely a recognition of my connection to whatever or whomever that I'm focused my love on for, concern for, respect for, sympathy, empathy, for whatever they might be going through, without any attachment to the outcome. Years ago, I was the senior producer for the Dr. Oz radio show on Oprah Radio, and the late George Carlin was our guest. I'll never forget this. Mehmet had done a heart procedure on Carlin 6 months earlier, and in the middle of the show, the power went out, and with it, our feed of the New York studios as we watched in Chicago, and all we could hear were voices in the dark. Which, of course, was a perfect setup for George Carlin. He says, God must not like what we're talking about. Maybe we should pray that the lights come on. And not 30 seconds later, the power was restored. Of course, we all laughed because of the timing, but he continued with this thought. Suppose the lights didn't come on and our prayers weren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine, but if it's God's will, and he's going to do what he wants anyway, why bother praying in the first place? Seems like a waste of time to me, said Carlin. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to God's will and leave it at that? I think it's a pretty good question. As I ran through this little memo that I wrote so long ago, I thought about that quantum physics book that I revised was really important to me because it got down to the molecular level of energy and how things work and all that stuff, and that there are many people in that area of study that feel that's really the essence of the Almighty, whatever we call it in your own life. Creator, God, I don't think it matters, but that's up to you. Some people it does. And that it's all about energy. And that between ourselves and each other, there's energy. And how that's utilized, how that's actualized, is the very essence of life itself. We got a lot of problems, there's no doubt. There's always been a lot of problems, there's no doubt of that either. And the problems are lessened when we act in an energetic way that's of the highest order. And to me, that goes all the way back to being in Presbyterian Church and listening to Reverend Bob G. Sills say, be a better human being. You don't need any special anointing. You can go out and do good in the world just because of the fact that you're here. And it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. If you mind your own spiritual business, that's all you're really asked to do. Of course, that's not the way the world works for the most part. And so as we were finishing up lunch yesterday, I gave my table companions, who have known me a very long time, the whole spiel about human math. You know, that if you're lucky, you get just over 28,000 days to be alive. That's 78 years old. Now, you say 78 years, it sounds like a lot. You say 28,000 days, it doesn't. So you take the 28,000 days that you're given, on average, if you're lucky, and then you subtract everything you've lived up to this point, and that balance in the middle is what you got left if you're lucky, if it all works out. I have less than 5,000 days. If it all works out, maybe I'll get 10,000. But on average, I have about 4,900 days to go before, that's it, expiration date, on average. I'm not going to spend a lot of time effing around bullshit. You know what I'm saying? I don't have time for it. So I put myself into projects and people that I think matter and trying to get things out that goes back to what Bob G said. Be a better human being. Make the world a better place because you showed up. The odds of being born are 1 in 400 trillion, and you're complaining about what? Fascinating to me. So it's all about perspective and all that goes along with it. So enough of my pulpit today. I want to thank you for spending time with me. I appreciate the sponsors who are unending support with this show after 5 years. It gets me up every Saturday morning, and thanks for your support. So I appreciate that. Switching gears a little bit to close the show, I get an opportunity to play music, and I always select songs from people I know won't sue me because there's a licensing thing. You just can't do a music show on podcasting and not pay for it. However, there are a group of friends and people I've worked with and people that are you know, connected to me that I'm more than happy to drop the needle on their songs because I want the world to hear what they have to say. And this guy, of course, has had more influence on my life musically and otherwise than anybody else since the late, great John Denver. 50 years ago today, half century ago, John recorded Annie's song at the RCA's Music Center of the World Studios in L.A. back in 1974. He wrote this for his then-wife, Annie Martell, after their first separation near breakup of their marriage in 74. He said it was one of the fastest songs he ever wrote, composing it in just 10 minutes while riding on a ski lift in Aspen. John was reflecting on all the joy he found in his marriage and his relief that they were back together. John said, "Suddenly, I'm hypersensitive to how beautiful everything is. All these things filled up my senses, and when I said this to myself, unbidden images came one after the other, just flowed to me, and all of the pictures merged, and I was left with Annie in my mind. That song was the embodiment of the love I felt for her at that time." Now, Annie recalled the day that he wrote the song. She said it was written after John and I had gone through a pretty intense time together, and things were pretty good for us. He left to go skiing, got down the Ajax chair on Aspen Mountain, and the song just came to him. He skied down and came home and wrote it. Get this, and it ties right into the show. It's why I'm dropping the needle on it. Initially, it was a love song, and it was given to me through him, and yet for him, it became a prayer. So a few years ago, I'm almost betting 10 at this point, I was with Annie in Aspen at John's sanctuary that she had overseen the production and building of, and we're walking across the pond that's there. And at one point, she's in front of me, we're on these stones, and I think she just had a knee replacement or knee surgery or something like that, and she reaches her arms behind to grab onto mine, and I grabbed her wrist to steady her, and I find myself standing in the middle of the John Denver sanctuary with Annie Denver propping her up on these stones, and the energy around all that was just incredible. And I thought about where things come from and where things go, and John had his time, and I'll have my time, and Annie will have her time, and you'll have your time, and in no time at all, it all shifts. So it started out as a love song to Annie from John, but it's really an homage to the Creator. And when you think about it in that way, and you listen to the words, it kind of changes everything and does become a prayer of thanks. Until next time, be well. Safe travels. Keep the faith.
Ki maya radas kak noc blesu kak gori visnoi kak trapapadas dion kak pustini e grozi kak soni akian ti moja radost, verni sa mnie. Come, let me love you, let me give my life to you, let me drown in your laughter. Let me die in your arms. Let me lay down beside you. Let me always be with you. Come, let me love you. Come, love me again. Let me love you, come love me again. You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain. Storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. Yes, ti moja radost, vernis ka mne.
Это за перевод слов.
Спасибо большое.